Ani, and welcome to Bomsida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasage. Is it an erosion of rights? Some think so, but the government says not. The name change of Indian and Northern Affairs Canada to Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Canada has sparked some controversy in the First Nations community throughout the country, and Inuit in Canada have a shorter life expectancy than others in Canada. We'll find out the contributing factors and what one organization says should be done to extend that grim statistic. Parents of missing children now have extra help from the Canadian Centre for Child Protection. The center has launched a National Missing Children Resource Center. All these stories plus great tunes coming your way right after the news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. A new partnership has been formed to move Indigenous rights forward. The United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues is in its 10th session right now, and it has launched the United Nations Indigenous Peoples Partnership. According to Indian Country Today Media Network, the partnership is committed to the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The UNIP aims to secure the rights of Indigenous peoples in respect to governance and conflict prevention as it relates to the use of natural resources in traditional territories. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is urging all countries to support partnerships so that the principles of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples will be turned into reality. Inuit in Canada have a shorter life expectancy than others in the country. Statistics have been published by the Conference Board of Canada's Centre for the North. The study indicates the average Inuit life expectancy is 66.7 years. That's the lowest life expectancy in Canada. The average national life expectancy is 81 years. Uldarek Hansen is the spokesperson for Inuit Tapiri Kanatami. She says there are several reasons that contribute to a lower life expectancy.
There's a high suicide rate, that there's, you know, unhealthy conditions like overcrowded housing, and we have a fairly high accident rate as well that contributes to a lower life expectancy.
She adds awareness campaigns and mental health services would go a long way towards addressing the issue. Hansen also says a national suicide prevention strategy needs to be implemented. First Nations don't fare much better than the Inuit, though. In a 2005 study by Health Canada, the average life expectancy for a First Nations man is 68.9 years, and a First Nations woman is a little closer to the national average at 76.6 years. Wapiskat First Nation is finally getting a new school. The federal government has recently promised the Northwestern Ontario community a new school. The community has been without a proper school for about 11 years. The former school, J.R. Nakaji Elementary, was shut down in the year 2000 because an old diesel spill posed a health threat. The First Perspective reports the government has made promises three times in the past to build a new school in Attawapiskat. Aboriginal and Northern Affairs Minister John Duncan announced earlier this month that money has been set aside for the new school, but there's still a little waiting to do. The school is to be completed by 2013. The education news is not so good in BC. There, the First Nations Education Steering Committee says Aboriginal and Northern Affairs is holding back on funding. Tyrone McNeil, president of the committee, says the federal government is holding back about 15% of funding. The 100 Mile House Free Press reports education jurisdiction talks have also stalled. Those negotiations had been in effect for 6 years. Nova Scotia Mi'kmaq chiefs don't want the province to sell Crown land to expand the Upper Clements Park. The Chronicle Herald reports the group sent a letter to the Ministry of Natural Resources expressing their disappointment that the province didn't follow the consultation process. The consultation process was ratified just last year between the province and the Assembly of Nova Scotia Mi'kmaq chiefs. In a press release, Eskasoni Chief Leroy Denny says the sale and transfer of Crown lands is clearly an infringement of Mi'kmaq rights and title due to traditional harvesting activities. Meanwhile, Natural Resources spokesperson Dan Davis told media that the province did follow the terms of reference. He adds they welcome a meeting with the Mi'kmaq to address the concerns. The numbers of missing Aboriginal children are overrepresented in the amount of children that go missing every year. But although Canadian Centre for Child Protection doesn't have the hard stats, it's a sad fact that they do know. The centre recently launched a National Missing Children's Resource Centre, missingkid.ca. The new resource tool has garnered the support of several First Nation leaders. Christy Dickowitz is the director of missingkids.ca. She says the online resource centre offers a variety of supports.
Parents can come in to our program through our website. They can register their missing child with our agency through the website, or they can call a 1-866 number, Kid Tips, to access trained caseworkers. And really, that's one of the most important things we do, of course, is to support families in the search for their missing children, advocate for those families, and provide that type of support. But beyond that, what we wanted to create with this new program is really a one-stop resource and response center for missing children. So, you know, all Canadians can come into the site, and we hope that they will, to get information, important prevention and education information as it relates to missing children, but also to access such things as like a community response plan that'll help guide communities when a child does go missing in terms of how they might be able to help in the search.
Dickowitz adds more than 50,000 children go missing each year. The search in BC for an Esconlith band counselor continues. Neske Manuel was last seen at a family campsite, and an intensive search around Esconlith Lake hasn't turned up any clues. The Manuel family has decided to expand the search to encompass all of North America. They say the 30-year-old man was an extensive traveler, but also, unlike him, to not check in. The family is offering a $1,000 reward for finding Neske. A photo of Neske can be found on the Union of BC Indian Chiefs website. Retiring Auditor General Sheila Fraser says the federal government must do more to address Aboriginal community issues and climate change. Fraser called the living conditions of some First Nations quite tragic. Fraser told CTV that over the last decade, her office produced 31 audit reports on Aboriginal issues. Despite that, she says too many First Nations people still lack what most other Canadians take for granted. One policy analyst says First Nation leaders and citizens should be wary of the name change to Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development. Dr. Michael Poslin sees the name change as a step in the wrong direction.
If he's going to relate to whoever's willing to work with them, to willing partners, then he's not going to deal with self-government, even though all of those respectable citizens have said a way to improve economic condition of First Nations people and First Nations communities is recognizing self-government as an inherent right and then supporting it. It seems to me that the government is moving in exactly the opposite direction.
Poslin says it's not clear what the minister's obligations are to Métis and Inuit. The Ministry of Aboriginal and Northern Affairs issued a press release on the name change. The ministry maintains the new working title has no impact on ministerial responsibilities to First Nations and that the government remains committed to issues important to First Nations. The Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development Ministry was unavailable for comment by the time this went to air. Robbie Robertson is among this year's Order of Canada recipients. The Mohawk musician is being recognized for his contributions to the music industry. The Order of Canada press release states, by transcending cultural and geographical barriers, he stands as a model for both Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal artists alike. And that's your National Aboriginal News. That was Gary Farmer and the Troublemakers with What You Gonna Do. Inuit in Canada have a shorter life expectancy than others in Canada. Statistics have been published by the Conference Board of Canada's Centre for the North. The study indicates the average Inuit life expectancy is 66.7 years. That's the lowest life expectancy in Canada compared to the national average of 81 years. Udlerek Hansen is with Inuitapri Kanatami, and here's what she says about the startling statistic.
Well, the study highlights the fact that Inuit, well, more specifically in northern Quebec region of Nunavik, the life expectancy is only 66.7 years as opposed to the Canadian average of 81 years old.
So what does that mean?
Well, I mean, it's an aggregate amount where it's not as though at the age of 66.7, we don't have anyone over the age of 66.7, that's not the case. It's that it takes into account many factors that would increase the rate of death, or in the case of, well, for our Inuit regions and our Inuit communities, it's taking into account that there's a high suicide rate, that there's, you know, unhealthy conditions like overcrowded housing, and we have a fairly high accident rate as well that contributes to a lower life expectancy.
And how can that be improved, life expectancy?
Well, there's many ways in which it can be improved. More housing is an obvious way of improving health conditions in our Inuit communities. It's our overcrowded housing is a real epidemic, and so are our suicide rates. We have 11 times the national average. Our youth are, and typically our youth, are taking their lives, and if this weren't the case, then our life expectancy would definitely increase. There's also measures that could be taken or improved upon, because it's not as though no one's trying. I mean, we have Health Canada programs that are trying to encourage people to live a healthier life, such as the blue light bulb program. But you know, there's other things that could be improved upon that would help. So, as I mentioned, there's accidents happening at a very high rate. Skidoos or ATVs or what have you, and if there was more promotion in terms of prevention and awareness, such as what happens here in the South, Don't Drink and Drive campaigns or healthy living campaigns, then I think that people will be more apt to take better care of themselves. It's an awareness as well.
Mm-hmm. And how does the high cost of food factor into that?
Well, the high cost of food is something that's trying to be revamped right now through the Nutrition North program. It was a food mail program before, but now it's called Nutrition North. And what it does is provides a subsidy to the retailers so that they could provide the food at a more closer to the cost of how much it would be in the South. There is that factor, most definitely, in order to have healthy foods as a viable option for people on low incomes. That would definitely help. But at the same time, there, as I was talking about, there needs to be awareness programs as to, you know, eating healthily and preparing your foods in a healthy manner, and promoting country foods, which is most healthy for Inuit. And then there's, once you start talking about country foods such as caribou and fish, seal meat, then you're talking also about the cost of going out hunting and gathering. These costs have increased. The cost of hunting and what have you used to be subsidized. Now through this Nutrition North program, that will no longer be the case. So we need to find other programs to support our hunters.
Hmm.
I'd also like to add that in the case of what can we do to increase life expectancy, we've been asking for quite some time for a national Inuit suicide prevention strategy. There are regional suicide prevention strategies, but there really needs to be a concerted effort right across all Inuit regions on a national strategy. I think that would most definitely help with the life expectancy. And also, we haven't got any mental wellness centers, mental wellness services at the community level. And, you know, we need these services and programs in place to help our youth and to help others who may need that extra help to live a healthy life.
That was Ulrich Hansen of the Inuitapari Kanatami. First Nation leaders throughout the country have concerns about the name change of Indian Affairs to Aboriginal Affairs, and we'll start with Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi.
The decision by the federal government to change the name to Aboriginal Affairs, I feel, is not reflective of who we are. You know, we're Anishinaabeg. And just like the Métis are the Métis and the Inuit are the Inuit, you know, they're not Aboriginal. The misconception of who we are started with discovery, you know, and when are they going to get it right? You know, they're here in our land. They should at least respect who we are here in our land. And we're Anishinaabe people. We're not Aboriginal. And we went through this debate, back in the early days of the constitutional talks, and we were trying to that's when the term First Nations came into play here, because names are being tossed around about how we should be referred to, and we talked about Indigenous, which you said was more international. We talked about Native, that was too generic because everybody says they're Native of something, and they said Aboriginal. We're not Aboriginal, we're the original people. And then people said, well, it's like saying, you know, normal and abnormal. You know, it's almost like a negative connotation to, to it. And an elder woman from Saskatchewan said, the preamble to the Canadian Constitution is a lie. It says that the founding nations of Canada were the English and French. She said, don't they know that we were the first nations in this land? And so we're the First Nations, we're Anishinaabeg, we're not Aboriginal, just like the Inuit are the Inuit and the Métis are the Métis. They're, the government should get it right. You know, how would any other nation, including Canada, like to be called by a wrong name? I don't agree with this change. And again, another example of no consultation or discussion, you know, with us on this issue.
Hmm. We've been talking, and there's been postings on Facebook all about this whole name change. So it's created controversy on the ground level. And anecdotally, some people are saying that they see this name change as a slow erosion of rights. And do you see something like that?
Absolutely. The British North America Act said Indians and lands reserved for Indians. It didn't say Aboriginals and lands reserved for Aboriginals. Our treaties reflected our nation, a nation basis of who we were as an Anishinaabeg nation. That's an attempt, much like they've been trying to do with, the Governance Act and everything, to municipalize and minimize, our standing here in this country. So there is absolutely no question in any way, shape, or form of their agenda.
And so would you rather see the name stay the same, Indian and Northern Affairs, or even see something different than Aboriginal Affairs?
Well, I think, unfortunately, we've been referred to as Indians, and the British North America Act referred to Indians and Land Reserve for Indians, and that's the way it's been for years, and until we get rid of the Indian Act and until we, work on the areas of jurisdiction in this country, which is the outstanding business. When we got bounced off the constitutional stage by Quebec separation, there was supposed to be another constitutional conference to talk about jurisdictions, and I think that would iron a lot of this out. The federal government has not followed through with what the constitutional talks of 1980 said should happen, and so it's still outstanding business, and outstanding business of dealing with our treaties and dealing with us as nations is still outstanding, and this is the government trying to do an end run on dealing with who we are as treaty partners.
That was Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi. And Federation of Saskatchewan Indian Nations Chief Guy Lonechild has similar views.
Well, I'm feeling that there wasn't any consultation with First Nations in Saskatchewan concerning the name change. What we have been told is that the Prime Minister's office has made aware the Ministry of Indian Affairs that they are going to change to the Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development. And at least in Saskatchewan, I do know this, is that we do have a similar department called First Nations and Métis Relations. And we prefer to have a distinct mention and recognition of the First Nations people in Saskatchewan because of the treaty relationship. And that the Constitution makes recognition that the First Nations are distinct with inherent and treaty rights, and rights to self-government and land is the special relationship Canada has with treaty peoples. And so we prefer not to use the word Aboriginal in our chiefs and assembly in Saskatchewan. It isn't something that is widely used in Saskatchewan, so it's either First Nations or Métis. We think it's not a step in the right direction in terms of lumping us together as Aboriginals. So that's our viewpoint, and that's what we intend to get some clarity on from the Minister of Indian Affairs as well as Canada.
And would you rather have it be returned to the former name, or perhaps something else be found?
Well, I think it's good to take a look at what the common accepted practice is across the country. And what is good for many of the First Nations in British Columbia, in Alberta, and the West, is that we are referred to as the First Nations and the First Peoples of Canada, and that there's orders of government that recognize inherent rights to self-government. And it should truly reflect accurately reflect the relationship as going forward. And certainly there's many, many standing obligations, both in treaty issues and in land and land claim issues. So I would like to see us to have a full consultation with the Minister of Indian Affairs with the Assembly of First Nations at the earliest possible convenience.
And so has the FSIN contacted Duncan about this to speak with him?
Yes, I did. Actually, I put a call into Minister Duncan just minutes after we had heard that there was indeed a name change. I've been on the phone with our members of Parliament here in Saskatchewan. This is something that we do need some clarity on. We need to have a dialogue about it. So many First Nations leaders across the country, I know, share our point of view here in Saskatchewan. So that's something we're hoping that the national chief and my colleague regional chiefs and other chiefs across the country would hope to get underway fairly shortly.
And that's certainly true. I was speaking with Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi, and his views reflect yours at the same time. But also, this name change has also created a lot of controversy on the ground level, and people are wondering if this is an attempt at an erosion of rights. And what do you think of that?
I hope that it isn't that. I hope that it isn't a change in policy direction. I think First Nations there's some due respect that needs to follow with the First Nations leadership, our elders, our communities. And I know many other people feel the same way. There needs to be a good understanding and appreciation for our history. So modernizing, the term that I guess the explanation that's being given to us in terms of modernizing, we fully believe that treaties are a bridge to the future, and that treaty relationship should be strengthened and respected. And so if we could look at a treaty relations secretariat, or we can look at a treaty relations office from Canada, that would be a step in the right direction, and that would actually be modernizing and living up to our special relationship we have with Canada. So I think much more dialogue needs to happen on this.
That was Guy Lonechild, chief of the Federation of Saskatchewan Indian Nation. Now here's Buffy St. Marie with Working for the Government. Policy analyst Dr. Mike Poslins has a very cautious view about the name change of the Ministry of Indian Affairs to Aboriginal Affairs, and he's also not surprised by it.
The ministry, the department's name is not yet, only the minister's title has changed. So that means the Minister of Aboriginal Affairs is supposedly the head of the Department of Indian Affairs. This has been on its way for quite a few years. Several governments, back to Trudeau, but certainly back to Mulroney, and has been a minister who was called the interlocutory for Métis and Inuit. And when Duncan was first appointed last year, he was given that title as well as Minister of Indian. So from government's point of view, seeing that giving him a short title, you know, it'll all fit on one business card, makes some sense. The question I think that is more worrisome is not clear what the minister's obligations are to Métis or Inuit, whereas I think that the primary duties of the minister as relations with First Nations arise out of the Department of Indian Affairs Statute Act and out of the Métis rulings that the Supreme Court has talked about the government's fiduciary duty to with First Nations. And it's interesting that the department's website doesn't say anything about this duty as legal in his opening paragraph. He does have a passing mention way down the bottom of the page. I think that's what this is all about, is the minister wants to relate to a greater number of Aboriginal peoples, and in order to do less fulfilling of the Crown's legal obligations to First Nations. I don't know what kind of, well, it has obviously different views on this, but the court has set out certain standards for defining Aboriginal rights from other rights. And basically, you have to be a member of a community that held those rights at first contact and have kept them in some way, shape, or form ever since. And I would think that applies only to very, very few Métis, whereas it applies to all members of First Nations. My question is whether the government is looking to bypass legal duties. The minister made a statement about being willing to work with willing partners. The partners have a duty to work with our First Nations. So this sounds a little like, to me, when somebody has a legal obligation, says, well, I'm going to work with legal partners. It sounds a little to me like the political equivalent of, you know, the old song, when I'm not near the one I love, the one I'm near. That's what I think this minister is up to.
That's interesting. Do you think that the First Nations have a right to be concerned with this name change?
They not only have a right, I think they would be foolish not to be concerned. For some time, there was a big emphasis on what the government was calling an inherent right to self-government, even though the government insisted on defining that word. Well, if you're going to have, if you're going to, who's willing to work with them, to willing partners, then he's not going to deal with self-government. Even though all respectable studies have said it's a way to improve economic conditions of First Nations people and First Nations communities is by recognizing self-government as an inherent right and then supporting it. It seems to me that the government is moving in exactly the opposite direction.
And one of the other things that was a concern to many of the First Nation leaders that they weren't consulted on the name change. And do you think that is a valid point?
Well, they weren't consulted on the policies that are underlying the name change. I think that's an extremely valid point, yes.
How so?
For the reasons I was saying before, that I think the minister is emphasizing the finding willing partners have been fulfilling his legal duties and obligations to First Nations, including the thing most emphasized by the court has been the duty to consult. And so he's taking on additional responsibilities, changing the name, changing the structure of the department, and not doing any of the consulting that is required by law.
That was policy analyst Dr. Michael Poslins. Now here's the Shane Anthony Band with Fueled by Breath.
The only way that I know you, you're Gilbert's girl. My best friend down the road from me, and you next door. We were playing hide and seek when you grabbed my hand. To O'Brien's hedges we ran, towards the trees. That's where you buried me. Buried me in the bell rang, everybody ran inside, but we ran wide up in the tree. And what Gilbert didn't see is that you kissed me and I smiled. So you kissed me again and I went blind, staring at you as we begin. In this heart to find you, to walk you on. That's when I found Gilbert sitting all alone. Now he wrestled me to the ground, but I know best friends find themselves back around. So at the dance, when they yelled snowball, everybody knew I'd never let go of you. And they had to watch the whole.
Missing children now have a new tool at their fingertips to help find their children as well as get supportive counseling. The Canadian Centre for Child Protection has launched missingkids.ca, a national resource missing children's resource centre. Here's Christy Dickowitz, the director of missingkids.ca.
Well, missingkids.ca is, you know, a lot more than a website. It's a whole program for Canadians on the issue of missing children. The website was launched yesterday in Ottawa with the Federal Minister of Justice, Rob Nicholson. We had four searching families with us when we were launching the program, who also had opportunity to meet with the Prime Minister following our announcement. So it was a really a good day, an important day. The program that we're launching called missingkids.ca is a new service for families of missing children. Parents can come in to our program through our website. They can register their missing child with our agency through the website, or they can call a 1-866 number, Kid Tips, to access trained caseworkers. And really, that's one of the most important things we do, of course, is to support families in the search for their missing children, advocate for those families, and provide tips of support. But beyond that, what we wanted to create with this new program is really a one-stop resource and response center for missing children. So, you know, all Canadians can come into the site, and we hope that they will. to get information, important prevention and education information as it relates to missing children, but also to access such things as like a community response plan that'll help guide communities when a child does go missing in terms of how they might be able to help in the search.
Okay, and you mentioned that support services, and can you tell us what kind of support services there are?
Well, basically, we have caseworkers, social workers and caseworkers, who are there to receive calls from parents, provide that support, and then basically work really closely with police and support the search in any way we can. So leveraging the tools we have through our other national one of our other national programs, cybertip.ca, we're going to be using innovative online search tools, as well as offline and traditional search. You know, for years now, we've sent out posters and done such things to, you know, raise awareness and get the public involved. But now we're going to leverage what we have. So doing such things as open source searching, guiding parents through how they can use technology. You know, we recognize that kids nowadays are quite connected. You know, most children are connected either through social networking or cell phones, and so we really want to start taking advantage of that and ensuring that parents have the information they need to try and connect with their child when they've gone missing.
All right, and I understand also that you have the support of the Assembly of First Nations National Chief and Grand Chief Ron Evans, and so how are they supporting the site?
Well, we've been very lucky in Manitoba. Grand Chief Ron Evans has been supportive of a number of initiatives we have put forward out of the Canadian Centre for Child Protection. Additionally, he's had a member of his staff join our Aboriginal Advisory Committee. So we've had an advisory committee for a period of time now who have helped guide help guide some public awareness initiatives for First Nations communities so that population is aware that this is a new program that's accessible and available to them. And we're going to be working with that advisory committee going forward in developing different initiatives. Aboriginal children are sadly overrepresented in the missing children statistics, and so we want to try to make a dent, and we want to try and make a difference. So we'll be working with those groups. Grand Chief Ron Evans actually attended the national launch in Ottawa with us, and we're very proud to have him there. So that was really important. Going forward, we're going to be working with the National Chief's Office to look at different ways, again, to reach the communities and to do some ongoing work with the National Chief's Office in terms of prevention and education as well.
So, and you mentioned that Aboriginal children are overrepresented in the national statistics. And can you give us an overview of the national statistics and missing Aboriginal children in that too?
I don't think at this point we really have adequate statistics to break it down. We know that Aboriginal children are overrepresented, but in terms of the breakdown, we don't have that available at this point. We hope to be able to do more of that now that we have this national program. What I can say is that there's over 50,000 missing child reports per year in this country, which is far, far too many. And we're certainly seeing some unique things happening that need to be addressed. You know, you may have seen in the media over the last period of time, the National Chief has done a great job of drawing attention to the fact that we're seeing Aboriginal teenagers going missing after they have left their home communities to go to school, and what a tragic thing to see that happen. And certainly here in Manitoba, we've had that experience. You know, Sunshine Wood, whose father was with us at the launch yesterday, and Dwayne Ross, who went missing, you know, within a few months of Sunshine, both from the same community. They both had been, you know, had moved into a larger center to go to school, and that was their experience. That was the experience that we saw, is that they were away from their home communities, and we don't know what's happened to them since. So I think some of those things are issues that need to be addressed, and a lot of organizations can come together and work on that issue.
That was Christy Dickowitz, director of missingkids.ca. You've been listening to Bomb Siddall with Jennifer Ashwasagay. Bomb Siddall is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment in a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bomb Siddall means walking together in the Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit my website at bombsedaw.com. That's B-A-M-O-S-E-D-A. And thanks for listening to Bomb Siddall.